Governor Andrew Cuomo has again left his mark on the state court of appeals as, in the final week of the legislative session, the state Senate signed off on his two newest appointments, Nassau County DA Madeline Singus and New York City Administrative Judge Anthony Canatero. To recap the process, which included some fireworks and what it could mean moving forward, we're joined by Ryan Tarinelli, Capitol reporter for the New York Law Journal. Welcome back to the show, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
So leading up to the confirmation process of the governor's nominees to the state's top court, listeners to the Capitol Press Room heard the reservations of the New York's criminal defense lawyers and what they had to say about Madeline Singus' appointment. But how did the rest of the legal landscape come down on her joining the Court of Appeals? And what was the reaction, if any, to Canatero's elevation?
Certainly the criminal defense lawyers were out front, mostly. They were the most vocal groups, and they had strong opposition. But there were a lot of attorneys across the legal landscape that had problems and issues with actually both of the nominees. They were some of the least qualified candidates. They were rated low by the bar associations. Law professors basically came out with this very long letter drawing concerns about their nominations. I heard from civil litigators who said that they didn't bring mid-level appellate experience to the bench, which is seen as really valuable on the high court, and especially because the two people they were replacing also came from mid-level appellate courts. Mm-hmm. I also heard from other people, too, who were not criminal defense attorneys, who say that there were other candidates who were superstars that got passed over. One example is Caitlin Halligan, who was nominated by President Obama to the D.C. Circuit Court mm-hmm. of Appeals, a very prestigious federal court. She had been a candidate for the State Court of Appeals multiple times. She got passed over. So I think that, for a lot of people in the legal community, that really, really rubbed them the wrong way.
So when Madeline Singus got a chance to talk about her time as a prosecutor before being questioned by the Senate Judiciary Committee, what did she have to say about her resume, which is one of the reasons activists on the left and criminal defense lawyers were opposed to her candidacy?
So she really tried to defend her prosecutorial experience while also establishing her independence. Mm-hmm. Those were essentially her two main arguments for her judgeship. She would say, you know, I've done really, really great reforms at the DA level. I'm a listener. I'm somebody who can come to the table and to try to resolve things, essentially, and I'm very, very fair. And then when she was asked about Cuomo impeachments and some of the more controversial topics, she sought to establish her independence. A lot of the critics say that she spent too much time as a prosecutor and she simply can't remove that hat when she goes onto the high court. She's previously identified Chief Judge DeFiore as a friend and mentor. People draw concerns with that as well. So critics say, we don't believe that you can be this impartial person with these topics when you've been arguing one side for so long of your life. Her supporters say DeSantis is not a lock-em-up, throw-em-up DA. They say that she essentially has her views, but she's a neutral arbiter, basically, or she at least tries to negotiate in good faith, and that goes a long way with them.
You mentioned that issue of independence, and I'm curious, what sort of questioning did she get on her level of independence with regards to her potentially serving on a trial to remove the governor if the impeachment process ever gets that far? What was her response? What was Canatero's response? And who asked questions about that?
It was definitely the Republicans on the committee that were asking about it. Singus did, frankly, the smart thing, which was to kind of decline to comment and say that she's going to follow the facts, which is about as much as you can expect for somebody in that position. But she basically said, you know, I'm going to be familiar with the law. I'm going to decide my own course. You know, I think that resonated with the senators, where she came out and said, you know, I have a career of integrity. I've been doing this a long time, and I make my own choices when it comes to things. I think that was her biggest selling point. And that was something she was really trying to give to the committee and show.
What was Canatero's response on this issue?
I actually didn't remember his.
It was that good, huh?
I think stuff was so wrapped up with the Singus nomination, and his was very quick, too. It only lasted about 10, definitely under 15 minutes. Really sailed through, and I believe a lot of that was him going over his resume, too.
Oh, interesting, because a lot of people don't know who he is.
And really who he is an attorney who has really come up through the judicial system, which is what a lot of these criminal defense attorneys really took issue with. They were saying, you know, we don't necessarily have anything against him, but it was the fact that he had never stood in spend a significant time standing in court with a criminal defendant or doing civil rights work, is that he was very much a product of the judicial system and its ethos, essentially.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the latest appointees to the State Court of Appeals, which were confirmed by the State Senate in the final week of the legislative session. And our guest is Ryan Tarinelli, Capitol reporter for the New York Law Journal. As a DA, Singus has raised objections to the recent reforms to the state's bail laws, essentially, which limit the use of cash bail. Did she get any pushback on this position from Senate Democrats who have really championed this issue?
She was asked about it. The pointed questions, those were not as much of the pointed questions, essentially. She was simply asked about it in more of a neutral tone. But that was definitely a point of contention for them. I think what's at stake here in every single form is the legacy of the Democratic majority, right, with these two nominations. Over the past 2.5 years, Democrats, having control of the state legislature, have been able to push through a wide range of things. So it's not just, you know, bail and discovery, but it's, you know, tenant housing protections, the Child Victim Act, police reform, 50A, you know, strengthening rights for people in police custody, you know, ban on police chokeholds, new rights for immigrants, farm workers, elimination of the religious vaccine, early voting, expanding voter access, you know, new standard for legal harassment, environmental reforms. Literally all of that is the purview of the Court of Appeals. Literally all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those most contentious things are going to be coming before the Court of Appeals, and they're going to decide whether or not to weaken or expand those or keep them as is. And I think I've spoken with a lot of people that these nominations were not treated perhaps with that seriousness. Some attorneys who say people don't realize the seriousness of appointing 2 people to the Court of Appeals, a bench of 7, what that means for the state. Because what's really at stake is the legacy of these vast changes from lawmakers. One great example is the 58 repeal, right? Mm-hmm. There's a big question right now. There's a case out of Western New York where a judge has ruled that 58 is not retroactive, meaning that you can't look back at the police records that have been sealed. And previously, it's only going forward. That could easily go before the Court of Appeals. And that really scares the heck out of a lot of criminal defense attorneys, essentially.
Well, the way you're framing it, though, is that these are accomplishments by the lawmakers that are potentially in jeopardy of being overturned, challenged, modified, what have you. But these are also all laws that the governor has signed off on. So one would think that these are things that he has a vested interest in preserving. And these are all appointees to the Court of Appeals that come from the governor. So why is there reason to suspect that his appointees to the Court of Appeals, which are all of them, he makes up the entire bench. He's got all of these guys that he's appointed all of them. Why is there any expectation that they would potentially strike down laws that he signed off on?
The concerns out there is that the governor has been pushed to the left on a lot of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And while he has publicly signed them and championed them in the back room and in negotiations, he's had to be pushed to the left on a lot of those issues, considering the Democratic supermajority in the Senate and, you know, the control in the upper chamber now. So I think that is the concern, is that while he might have publicly championed them, he wasn't as supportive or as full-throttled support.
So this is his backdoor way of potentially undermining them?
That's what some people say in some of the legal communities. They see that. The other point to all this, though, is there's a lot of unknowns, right? D.A. Singus has spent her career mostly in the criminal justice realm. We don't know how she's going to rule on the civil realm. Ken Ohtara has spent a lot of his time in the civil world, and we don't know what he's going to do in the criminal realm. He could be a really great ally to Judges Rowan Wilson and Judge Rivera on the left of the side of the court. So it's really not settled yet, but that's the overarching concern. The other thing, too, the big factor is we still have another vacancy coming up with Eugene Fahey retiring at the end of the year. So that will kind of be the final leg in this chapter, is mm-hmm. what's going to happen with that court. So there's still a ton of stuff up in the air, but that is the concern broadly. And that's the long trajectory, is that a lot of these reforms are going to be going up at some point or another, because New York is a super litigious state. They're going to be coming before the Court of Appeals.
The Senate also confirmed 8 appointees from Governor Cuomo to the Court of Claims. For those of us who didn't take the LSATs, can you give us a refresher on what the Court of Claims actually is, and should we care about any of these appointments?
My favorite court. No. Court of Claims was essentially designed, to my understanding, that basically for cases against the state. You know, so if you have a lawsuit against the state, mm-hmm. go before a Court of Claims judge. Realistically, these judges don't often end up there sometimes. They go into what's called an acting Supreme Court seat, which is where they are essentially a state Supreme Court seat.
But which is normally an election.
Which is normally an election, yes. And but they are simply appointed. These are super important seats, though, and they can sometimes come with some controversy. Last year, there was a Court of Claims nominee who was a competitor to the daughter of Chief Judge DeFiore in a 9th Judicial District race. That the daughter's competition, a woman named Veronica Hummel, was appointed to a Court of Claims seat. She then dropped out of the elected position, thus clearing the way and guaranteeing that Chief Judge DeFiore's daughter, Alexandria Murphy, was able to get right to the seat.
That sounds fine. Uh-huh. There's nothing wrong with that.
Alexandria Murphy also was a lot of political insiders raised tremendous concerns because of her age. At the time, she was 36 years old. She had 10 years of legal experience. She often promoted that on the campaign trail. Turns out less than 5 of that was actually full-time experience in the DA's office, and yet she was elected to a state Supreme Court seat in a 14-year term due to a Court of Appeals nomination.
So is there anything we should be concerned about? Any red flags of these latest appointees, or so far do they all seem to pass the smell test of political intrigue?
Not that I've seen it this year. There was one, Rhonda Tomlinson, I believe, who had some concerns with her time as an administrative judge over Rikers, and there was some reports that she was strong-arming judges into not releasing people who had been caught up on technical parole violations. There were some concerns about that, but other than that, we haven't found any events such as the one that I described last year. But
well, we've been speaking with Ryan Tarinelli. He is the Capitol reporter for the New York Law Journal. Ryan, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.